Route 616, your home for all Finn's Marvel main continuity. Hello, everybody. This is episode 61 of Route 616. I'm here with only Bill today because Dan didn't pay for his Wi-Fi, so...
That fucker was buying Liverpool merch instead of paying his bills.
Yeah, what a fucking guy. Yeah, I don't... That's probably not true. We're just joking, by the way, but...
Yes, we're not actually saying he's broken. Morally bankrupt, but not financially, as far as I know.
Very much morally bankrupt, but still. Well, I know Dan usually carries the pop culture stuff, but me and Bill will give a good go at it. I'm going to start off with a couple of upcoming games that look interesting, and one is interesting for you because you like the Soulsborne games, so that Lies of P game.
That's either going to be awesome or terrible, and I haven't looked at it enough to tell which.
I saw a comment that's... You finish first, because my...
People are saying it's like Dark Souls, but people say everything that's vaguely difficult is like Dark Souls, so I don't put a whole lot of stake into that.
Well, I saw somebody make a comment that said that it was hilarious looking at the Steam game page for this game, because there's people mad, because... I think it's like... already out, but it's freshly out.
It is out. It's been out for like a week and a half or something.
And he was saying how hilarious it was to read comments on the Steam page for the game because people were complaining because it's a Soulsborne game, except the hitbox is like... Or no, it's a Soulsborne game, but you actually have to dodge because apparently...
Oh, so it's Bloodborne.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because Bloodborne you can't parry. Well, you can, but it's terrible and you lose.
So people were upset because of the... You actually need to be smart with your dodging or whatever.
But yet, Bloodborne is considered the best Soulsborne game. Sometimes people make no sense.
Yeah. So that's pretty funny. It does look interesting. I'm not a fan of those games or anything, but it looks like an interesting concept. The other game I just saw a clip for today... Apparently, did you know that Hellboy's getting a game? Because I did not. I didn't know this until I just randomly saw a clip from the game account this morning.
I hope it's Hellboy comic inspired, not
the
Hellboy movie inspired.
The art style of the game is like pretty much the art style of the comics, which is kind of crazy. It looks bad, but also like it could be fun. I don't know. It doesn't. It looks kind of boring from the little clip, but it looks like it has potential to actually be a shockingly good game. So I can't tell which side it's gonna fall on, but that'll be interesting to keep an eye on for people making comments about. I don't know if I have any other new pop culture type things going on. Really, Marvel's like not got anything going on right now. Really, I guess James Gunn said that. James Gunn revealed three characters he wants to keep using in the future for DCU that have already been used for their last universe project, but he's bringing back John Cena as Peacemaker, he's bringing back Viola Davis as Amanda Waller, and he wants to bring back Blue Beetle. So, he plans to use those three still. Which would probably be fun for Dan to comment on with the Blue Beetle Finn, but yeah.
Yeah, he's the only one that's seen Blue Beetle yet.
So, I mean, I guess that's a good sign. I guess they feel good about his performance as the character, if that's the case, so. That's good. That's about all I have, I think, for the pop culture.
Yeah, I don't really have anything pop culture-y this week.
For once, I guess we won't take 15 to 20 minutes, and we'll get to some comics today, I guess. We've been drudging through a big Hulk stretch, so we're finally getting through that today. As we have four more issues of that with Tales of Sun 71 through 74. Then we're going to have an issue of Amazing Spider-Man with issue number 24 of that title. And Sergeant Fury and Silent Commandos number 19 will then finish us off for today. And then we will go through our end of the month bonus stuff, which is our pull list and our best and worst of the month. So, yeah. So to start off today, we have Tales to Astonish number 71, The Beast Story, and this one is titled Like a Beast at Bay. Stanley and Jack Kirby here. Apparently Mike Esposito helped on this issue. I didn't even realize, I don't think, at the time. It says inks are by Mike Esposito as well. Cover art is by Gene Colan and Vincent Coletta, which makes sense because it's a Namor cover. And Artie Simic's on letters. June 1965 release date. This is a 10-page story. And Bill's going to start us off joyfully.
Yeah. About the Mike Esposito thing. This was about the time when Jack was starting to pull back on his art duties. And so, quite often, he'd just turn in very rough sketches, and then the inker would have to finish them. So that's why Esposito's getting credit on the art as well, or on the pencils as well as inks.
He probably didn't in the comic. It probably all went to Jack, but...
Yeah, no, it's in the comic, it's just listed as pencils by Jack and inking by Esposito, but...
Well, good for Esposito to get his credit here, then, I guess.
Yeah. Anyway, with the Hulk about to attack the giant humanoid, Rick rushes to stop the Hulk before he gets caught in the explosion of the giant Sunday Punch missile deployed by General Ross. Hulk finally hears Rick's warning, and he grabs the boy and tries to escape. The missile meets its mark, hitting the humanoid and exploding, and while Rick and Hulk were clear of the explosion itself, the two are rocked by the shockwave. Landing on a plateau, Hulk realizes that Rick has been knocked unconscious and performs artificial respiration on the boy to revive him. Elsewhere, the leader watches on his monitor as his gigantic humanoid is toppled. As the military tries to take custody of the gigantic android, the leader causes it to self-destruct. The leader then decides to try to either make Hulk his ally or destroy him. The military, meanwhile, spots the Hulk making his escape with the revived Rick Jones and manages to follow the two to Banner's secret lab, where they have the two cornered. In spite of the Hulk's defensive attacks, hurling rocks at the military personnel, Ross orders an airstrike on the base and orders the Hulk to surrender or else be bombed from above. The Hulk, not wanting to put Rick in danger, sends the boy out to safety and prepares for the worst. At that moment, the mental image of the leader appears and appeals to the Hulk to be his ally, as he has the means to teleport the Hulk out of his current predicament, giving the Hulk just moments to decide. This story is continued next issue.
Yeehaw, partner.
Sounds like not much happened there, but this one was actually all right.
I actually like this. This is the last one I gave 3 stars for this stretch, I think.
I gave this one 3 stars, and I quite enjoyed the fact that the Hulk, or the leader's giant android, went down like a little bitch in like 3 seconds.
That actually was. That's the best use of the fucking humanoids so far.
Yeah. Because I was dreading this issue the first time I read it, when I'm like, oh god, he's going to fight another humanoid, but bigger.
Yeah, I was scared too.
And then it went down like a little bitch in 3 seconds, and it's just like, okay, this is actually pretty good. Hmm. I mean, for the most part, this Hulk run has been a lot better than I remembered it being.
It's even a lot better than I remembered, because I've still been giving it like 3s, maybe 1, 2, even since Jack took over, so it's... This last stretch of it just had a bad effect. It's also just that there's so many of them together, too, that it bogs down.
And the fact that, like, coming into this, I was dreading it because I was still in the mentality of the previous Hulk run.
Yeah.
And so I saw, like, 15 Hulks in a row and just figured it was going to be almost unbearable.
I will say that besides for how we left off with the Red story there, that I still did like Steve Ditko's half of this a little more than Kirby's, but...
Yeah, I enjoyed Ditko's more until, the whiplash-inducing change when Kirby took over.
Yeah. But I guess we shall now move on to issue 72, the Beast story. This one is titled Within the Monster Dwells a Man. Stan Lee on this one. Jack Kirby with Mike Esposito helping him out again. Mike Esposito on inks. Gene Colan and Vincent Coletta cover yet again. Sam Rosen is on letters. July 1965 release date. A 10-page story, and I will take this one away. Continued from the last issue. Searching for the second clue to the location of Neptune's trident, the Submariner is forced to fight the Seaweed Man of the Forbidden Sea.
I think you're reading the wrong summary.
I am. That's the Namor one. I just realized as I was finishing that sentence. I have to scroll further down. This one is continued from the last issue. With the military, this sounds like Hulk, about to bomb his hidden base, the Hulk decides to join the leader and is teleported out of there by the leader's devices. After the military bombs Baroness Cave, they search
the ruins.
I'm
going to stop you right there, because that's just patently wrong.
Okay.
Hulk never agrees to join the leader. Hulk gets knocked out by the bombardment, and then the leader just teleports him against his will.
That's, yeah, that is accurate. He's pretty much, like, he's, the Hulk's the bait, and then he's knocked out. So the leader's like, okay, that's a yes for me. Which is, very problematic for the leader, but, you know, whatever. Teleported there, but it leaves the fight. After the military bombs Baroness Cave, the searched ruins assume the Hulk's been atomized in the attack, and all believe him to be dead. When the Hulk appears in the leader's lab, the leader shows him around and tells him that he intends to use his humanoids to take over the world. I'm glad he's not done with those. The Hulk describes that he will not side with the leader in his goal of conquest. However, he soon finds himself knocked out with an odorless gas and put in a room for later observation. The leader intends to find out how the Hulk got smarter since their last encounter. Since, of course, reminded that Bruce Banner is now stuck in the body of Hulk since he was shot in the fucking head and killed, but Rick Jones brought him back, but he's stuck in the form of the Hulk. As the leader checks on his experiments, the Hulk awakens to find that his body is slowly going through the change that will turn him back into Bruce Banner, which will cause his death. Not wanting to die without a fight, Hulk tries to smash his way through the leader's base in hopes of finding the device that will save his life. The leader, thinking the Hulk is trying to escape, has some of his new camouflaged humanoids attack, which staggers the Hulk. Overpowered and knocked off his feet, the Hulk is determined to stop the transformation or else he will die. The story is continued next issue. That one sounds...
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, that one sounds half decent, but I actually gave this a 2. And now I'll let you tell what you were
going to
say.
I was just going to say, this one was actually pretty good. I gave it another 3. It's definitely one of the weaker issues, but I don't know. I actually found it interesting, like, the dilemma of the Hulk where he was trying not to turn back into Banner and just immediately die. That would get old really fast if they kept it as, like, the new status quo, but they give up on it quickly enough that it doesn't get tiring.
Yeah. I do like that. I don't even know if I can explain what I didn't like about this issue per se now, with some time. I didn't love how easily Hulk kept being taken out throughout this issue, I think was part of my issue, but he's still a fresh character, they're working around, so it's, yeah. I just, this one didn't sit right with me as much, so I didn't give it a 3, but it wasn't terrible. It was alright.
No.
So... on that note, moving on to the next one, issue 73B story.
Let me get ready for that.
This is where Bill and I are going to disagree on one. Well, we just did, but we're going to disagree more on this one. Another World, Another Foe. This one is titled. Bill's taking some liberties on the other end, I hear. Written by Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Bob Powell. Oh, Bob Powell joined. Nice. Inks by Mike Esposito. Jack Kirby and Mike Esposito on the cover. Artie Simics on letters. August 1965. Release date. 10-page story. No wonder the art in this one sucked, by the way. And this one's for Bill to take. I know Bill likes this issue, so...
Oh, fuck you. To be fair, I didn't hate this much the second time. As much. Overpowered by the leader's humanoids when fighting to stop from changing back into Bruce Banner... The Hulk is on the verge of death should he return to his human form due to the bullet in his head. That's all one sentence, by the way. Realizing that there is something wrong with the Hulk, the leader calls off his humanoids and takes the Hulk to his medical lab. There he bombards Hulk with more gamma radiation, stabilizing his transformation and keeping him as the Hulk, and removes the bullet from his brain. After testing the Hulk to ensure that he has reached full strength, the leader tells the Hulk of his mission. Having discovered the Watcher's Citadel on the blue area of the moon, the leader had also tracked the Watcher's travels to his home planet. There, the leader became aware of the Ultimate Machine, a device which he seeks in order to conquer the Earth. The leader sends the Hulk to the Watcher's home world in order to obtain the device, teleporting the Hulk light years in space between his destination. The Watcher welcomes the Hulk and tells him that he will not interfere with anything the Hulk may choose to do on the Watcher's home. Guided by the leader to the location of the ultimate machine, the leader warns the Hulk of another who had come to the Watcher's planet seeking the ultimate machine as well. However, before the Hulk can be adequately informed, he is struck by the creature in question, the being known as the Amphibian. This story is continued next issue. Oh, actually, it was the next one I hated. This one's not that bad.
We're on the same page. Yeah, I thought this one was fine.
I might have put the wrong one in my spreadsheet of best and worst comics, because this is the one with the Amphibian on the cover.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's the next one where he actually fights it that I hate it.
This one's actually fine. It's a good setup for the next one. The villain is lame, of course, but this one's relatively okay.
Yeah, I mean, you barely see the villain in this one, so it doesn't matter.
Exactly. So we're
actually... I made jokes about the Hulk fighting the Gorn, but, this came out, like, 2 years before that episode of Star Trek, so... it's more like Kirk fighting the Amphibian.
So, yeah, I guess we both gave this a 3, then?
Yeah, I gave this a 3.
Alrighty. Oh, on that note, I really don't have much to say about that one. It was really a lot of setup for the next issue, which doesn't pay off, so... 74B story of Tales to Astonish, The Wisdom of the Watcher. Everybody's favorite at this point. Stan Lee, Bob Powell gets first credit here, so he must have done more of the art this time. Bob Powell and Jack Kirby. Inks by Mike Esposito. Gene Cole and Vincent Coletta on cover. Sam Rosen on letters, September 1965 release date, 10-page story. And I know Bill had a comment to make there before I take this away.
Did I? I was looking to see if I had my...
You sounded like you were getting ready to comment when I made the Bob Powell comment.
No, I was digging around to see if I have the right thing in my worst comic.
Oh, okay. Well, then on that note, I will take us away for this last issue for now of the Hulk. It's not at all the last issue, but it's the last one we're covering for a little bit, so yay. Locked in battle with the Amphibian over possession of the Watcher's ultimate machine, the Hulk finds that he is evenly matched against the creature. Not wishing for his home to be destroyed, the Watcher transports the Hulk and the Amphibian to a desolate area in which they can fight without damaging anything. While at first the Amphibian has the upper hand, the Hulk soon overpowers the creature and throws it into orbit. The Watcher, seeing that the battle has been won by the Hulk, transports the Amphibian back to its home world. With the battle over, the Watcher, not wishing to interfere, transports the Hulk back to his home world, where the Hulk collects the ultimate machine, in spite of the Watcher's warnings. The Hulk is then suddenly transported back to Earth, where the leader takes the ultimate machine from him. When trying to use the device, the machine affixes around the leader's head, seemingly killing him. And technically he does die here, but he shows up again
later. Yeah, I don't think they ever explain how he survived this.
Probably not. He shows up next in Hulk, Incredible Hulk 115.
Yeah, so I think they'd forgotten by then.
Probably.
Because that's like 40 issues away.
Yeah, it's like 2 or 3 years later or something like that.
Yeah, this one is weird.
It's very
weird. The half
weird.
Where he's fighting the Amphibian sucks.
Sucks.
But then the end, where he goes back to the leader and gives him the ultimate machine, and the leader fries his own brain with it because of his hubris,
is actually pretty good.
But I settled on giving this a 2 because so fuck the Amphibian.
Yes. And even the leader stuff, like, cool that they killed him off, but like, fuck. At this point, I just had a bad taste in my mouth from this whole thing. So.
I was ready for this run to be done. I'm glad it's a couple episodes before we get to the next Hulk.
Yeah. It'll be a little bit, because I haven't even got to the next Hulk yet, so...
It comes after the big...
Doctor Strange stretch?
Big Thor run.
Oh, so...
The Thor and Hercules stuff. It comes after that.
So it's definitely going to be a little bit then, because there's still a huge Doctor Strange stretch ahead. And
yeah, this is entry 462, And the one we're on right now is 360. So, yeah, basically 100 comics till the next appearance by Hulk.
That's sweet. That's awesome. Okay. Well, goodbye, Hulk, for now. Let's move on to Amazing Spider-Man number 24. Spider-Man Goes Mad is the title.
This might be a bit of a lateral move, although most of the site felt far better about this comic than I did.
You and me are on the same basis, I think, with this one. Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, of course, the masterminds behind Amazing Spider-Man. Sam Rosen's on letters. February 1965 release date. 20-page story, and I will let Bill take this issue of Amazing Spider-Man. Notice how I didn't put good before it.
Yeah, well, this is definitely peak Stan Steve phoning it in. I think he has one more good. Actually, I think we've even read the last good Steve arc. I can't remember if that's still to come.
No, I think it's still to come because I've read a few since that were decent.
The two-parter with the Crime Master is what I'm thinking of.
Oh, I think that's what we just covered last, maybe?
That's
or
what I'm thinking.
I don't remember.
Or is it the second Crime Master appearance? Like the second Foswell appearance? I can't remember how that plays out, because it's been 5 years since I've read any more Spider-Mans than this one.
I think it might be... I think it's next week. I think it's next week.
Yeah, because I know he has one more good organized crime arc right before he leaves the title. Actually, I don't think it is for a while, because there's still, like, Molten Man and stuff first.
Which happens soon, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember you reading that, but we definitely haven't covered it.
No, we haven't.
Anyway, on to the synopsis to Spider-Man we are covering. Peter's day doesn't start off well as he breaks up a burglary, but can't sell pictures since Frederick Foswell spotted Spider-Man, but not Peter Parker. While trying to hide from J. Jonah Jameson at the Bugle, I don't know why I said Beagle there, he spots a letter from Ned Leeds to Betty Brant. When Peter comments on it, as much as he tries, he comes off as jealous and web-slings around the city to keep his mind off it. Because sulking is the best way to not look jealous. Sorry, I'm filling in for Dan since he's not here. Suddenly, Jameson decides to have the Bugle staff interview normal people and tell them why they hate Spider-Man. Even if the Bugle staff never published the good things. When Flash catches wind of this, he scares the staff off. Meanwhile, Liz Allen allows Peter to be her tutor for science, much to Flash's dislike. As Jameson celebrates his biased poll, he gets a visit from Dr. Ludwig Reinhardt, who tells Jameson that due to the split personality between that of a man and a spider, it's only a matter of time before Spider-Man breaks down. When Peter hears this, he worries that he might be going crazy and not know it. He makes his way down to the Bugle to tell Dr. Reinhardt that he's wrong, but his spider sense tells him that a jealous Flash is following him. Peter finally loses Flash covertly by throwing his spider beam to a roof while rounding a corner that Flash hasn't rounded yet. He gets distracted by the beam and loses interest in Peter, because Flash is like a fly. He just sees a shiny thing and completely loses focus. Peter then turns into Spider-Man and makes his way to Jameson's office, but out of nowhere, Dr. Octopus comes to attack him, but disappears just as quick. This repeats again with the Sandman as well as the Vulture, and Spider-Man starts doubting his sanity. These are really bad sentences. He worries that he might start attacking innocent people believing they're criminals, so he heads home for a rest. When he sees himself in the mirror, he decides not to wait and visits Dr. Reinhardt immediately. As he enters the doctor's house, the entire room is upside down, including the furniture, bookshelves, and even the doctor. As he runs to another room, it's also upside down, and as Dr. Reinhardt starts to consult him, Peter is taken to a room where everything is normal. As the consulting begins, more images of his enemies appear and vanish. At the Daily Bugle, however, Foswell comes to Jameson with news, and Jameson tells the press room to kill the story on Reinhardt as Jameson goes out to find him. Jameson enters in with an angry Flash, just as Spider-Man is ready to confess who he is and confronts Dr. Reinhardt of being a fraud. As the fraud is revealed, Flash tackles Jameson and Spider-Man runs after Dr. Reinhardt, realizing that the house has been staged with furniture nailed to the ceiling. The mask is pulled off and the doctor is none other than Mysterio. Mysterio tells Jameson that due to his editorials, he picked the right time for Spider-Man to crack, and tells Jameson that had he not interrupted, Spider-Man would have been finished. Liz finally catches up to Peter and they go out to study. Before doing so, Peter tells a worried Aunt May where he's going. And that's the end of the story.
That was...
It was definitely something.
Yeah, that was a trip and a half. Well, not really. It wasn't really a trip for us, but it certainly was for Peter, I suppose. Yeah, I gave it 3 still, but, like, it barely... Like, it just got a 3. This wasn't that... It was good enough, but not that good. This was not the normal quality of Amazing Spider-Man.
The only thing that pulled it into a 3 territory for me was the interactions with Liz and Flash. The fact that Liz was actually being nice to Peter and, like, they were studying together and it wasn't a date thing. They were just studying together. And then Flash getting jealous and trying to follow him and ending up getting in the way of the supervillain fight at the end because he's mad at Jameson for insulting Spider-Man. That was good stuff. Everything else was awful.
Yeah, the main plot of the story wasn't too good. And the Mysterio, it being Mysterio, is pretty obvious if you know anything about Spider-Man and his villains.
I've never liked Mysterio, and I've never liked Is the Hero Going Insane stories, so...
I don't this like one Is was... the Hero Going Insane stuff.
Yeah, because the answer's so obvious. If they actually went nuts, you wouldn't have a comic book anymore. Like, even more than will the character die, it's just, it's pretty obvious that it's not going to happen, so...
I love the idea of Mysterio, but he has a lot of bad stories.
Yeah.
He has some good ones here and there, but people don't tend to handle him right a lot of the time.
And his power set just leads towards the type of stories I don't want to read.
Yeah. That's pretty fair. So yeah, this one barely got out with a 3. On that note, let us go to Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos issue number 19. Which, yeah... This one is a comic of the week for sure. I just forgot to actually pull this one up, so there we go. Stan Lee writing this one. Got Dick Ayers on art, Frank Giacola on inks, Jack Kirby, Chick Stone doing the cover. Sam Rosen is on letters. April 1965 release date and 20-page story. This one is titled An Eye for an Eye. And I'm going to take this one. Very short synopsis, we might fill in details if we feel like we need to. Fury is anxious for revenge after the death of Pamela Hawley in an air raid in the previous issue. Accompanied by the Howling Commandos, he goes on an unsanctioned mission to Venlo in the Netherlands to hunt down the man who ordered the raid, General von Krumpt. That's literally the synopsis.
Okay, so perhaps a little bit more information is necessary. But not a whole lot.
Yeah.
Because, like, 90% of the story is just the Howlers fighting with Van Crump's men. Yeah. And then Fury chasing him into a biplane and fighting him in the biplane and eventually letting him die.
Which is actually a pretty sweet action sequence, to be
it
honest.
It is. It's probably the best one they've put in the Howlers so far.
It is, in my opinion. I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. It's... A lot of the issue, it's pretty much half the issue is that, and then half the issue, well, maybe not half, but another good chunk of the issue is the grief of Fury. Like, him dealing with the fallout of Pamela's death in his own way and all that.
Just running the Howlers into the ground so that something like that never happens to them, and ironically actually making it more likely that it's going to happen because if they're exhausted, they can't defend themselves properly.
Well, the thing is, it's actually a shockingly realistic and relatable take on grief.
Yeah, because Fury does not deal with his grief well.
But that's the good thing about it.
Yeah, it's exactly how he would handle it. And it's good because not everyone deals with grief well. Like, he doesn't handle it in the right way, but he handles it in the way Nick Fury would. No.
Yeah, but not everybody does. Everybody handles it in their own way. And this was handled very well and was written logically. Honestly, it was handled logically.
Yeah, it's some of Stan's best writing.
Generally, this is... I would highly recommend checking out the previous issue, done this one together, because they're both very good. I actually gave this one the full 5 stars. I love this issue. This was very fun read, very good read, and I like the grief aspect and the awesome biplane action sequence. I just went the full 5 on this one.
Okay, so ironically, this is the issue we're going to disagree the most on. I gave it 3.
Damn, I thought you'd go 4 for this one.
The biplane sequence is good, and the grief sequence is good. The problem is that's about 6 pages. The other 14 are rather dull Howling Commando stuff. They don't really ever run into any trouble because this is meant to be a catharsis after Pamela's death. So it's supposed to be just the Howling Commandos steamrolling this group of Nazis.
You are more in line with the site average, to be fair.
Yeah. But when they steamrolled them for, like, 14 pages, it got kind of tiring.
Yeah, I will say my rating in actuality would have been more like a 4.5, but I just rounded up because I liked a lot of this so much. Because there is some stretch of this that was... There's probably a good 5 pages or so that I was kind of getting like, okay, let's get through this a little bit, so... I guess I just have more patience with this title.
I also had just read 4 Hulks and an Amazing Spider-Man that I didn't like for the second time.
Yeah, you might have been feeling a little nicer.
I might have been kinder to this if I hadn't been coming off of rereading those 4.
I didn't think you and I would be so far away on this one.
No, that's what I said. I was not expecting this to be where we disagreed the most.
Yeah.
But you like Sergeant Fury much more than I do overall.
I do, but I think this is one of the best issues of this title, too, so... But
I agree.
Yeah. I thought you would. That's why I thought it was going to get a 4, but it just didn't.
This title, for me, is... fine.
Yeah.
I generally enjoy reading them, and I generally never think about them again as soon as I'm done.
That is the thing. I do really like the series so far. It's obviously not going to be as good later on, but probably at least. And then I do tend to forget what happens in these a lot of the time, so it's kind of hard to think back sometimes on what actually happened in these fucking comics.
Yeah, these are fun. But I'm not going to think about them again. They're not going to stick with me the way something like an Amazing Spider-Man 121 will.
Fair enough.
Which is an issue that I remember from 5 years ago I gave 5 stars to.
Yeah. It's one of those cases of... sometimes I rate very fairly, sometimes I'm a little inflated on some of the stuff that I really like. So this is one of those cases, but... I stick by what I like, so...
I'm not going to judge you for that rating. Like, it's not what I would have given it, but I figured you were going to be higher than I was. I just thought you were going to be a 4.
Well, it's not like it's a... It's not like it's an Impossible Man moment, so...
No, this isn't a What's Wrong With You comic. I'm not going to make fun of you for giving this Sergeant Fury the best rating.
Still one of my favorite... Still one of my favorite moments on this podcast is our very opposite ends of the spectrum reaction to that issue.
That is still the most contentious issue we've ever covered.
Yes.
It probably will always be. I don't think we'll ever tie it.
It's going to be up there. I'm sure there'll be points that will contend with it, but
there will be points that will disagree. But honestly, I can't think of another title that one of us is going to hate enough to give a 1, and another one of us is going to love enough to give a 5.
Oh, man. That was a good time. Oh, shit. Well, that was...
And the best thing about it was we weren't even that weird, because I looked at the average ratings on the site, and it was all 1s and 5s.
Yeah, it was literally, do you like this kind of thing, or do you hate this kind of thing, pretty much.
Yeah. And they stopped doing that kind of thing, which is why I don't think we're going to have that wide a spread.
Yeah, they started playing it safer, so... Which is in a way is
I mean, they get riskier. Yeah, they get riskier going forward, but it's a different kind of risk. It's we're going to tell a really dark story, and you either love it or you don't. Not we're going to do this zany shit and hope you don't hate it.
Yeah, no, where it doesn't feel like they took LSD before they fucking made the comic.
Yes.
That's
speaking of which, I'm still regretting chugging half that fucking marijuana pop for a joke.
I didn't even see what you had at the time because I was looking at the page. So
it's
that's funny. You're gonna be fucked up.
It was very, very sugary.
I'm
and yes, I did buy that just for the gag.
I might have to try one of those at some point, but anyway.
It tastes like shitty off-brand orange soda.
Oh. Well, orange soda's nice, though, so... that was certainly an interesting week of comics, to say something about it.
It's one I'm glad to be done with, even though I didn't mind reading it. It'll be nice to be able to talk about something else for a while.
I was really happy to get out of the Hulk. And then I was like, what the fuck is this Spider-Man? And I was like, oh my god, this Surgeon Fury. That might be also why I liked Surgeon Fury so much, because I was finally happy to have a comic I actually enjoyed legitimately.
That's possible, because I peeked ahead to the first comic recovering next week, and I gave it a 4.
probably is the case, possibly, then. Speaking of next week, since Bill just gave me an easy open, we have Amazing Spider-Man 25 to open the week next week, followed by Daredevil number 8. Then we get a two-part story with more Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 26 and 27, which
this
is
the one I was thinking about, kind of, but it's not the last good Ditko story. The last good Ditko story is a three-parter coming up.
I think I know which one it is, because I've
if this be my destiny.
Then we get Daredevil number 9. And then to end the episode off next week, we'll have another Sergeant Fury issue with issue number 20.
You know, I'm very glad that Sergeant Fury crept in there. Because I was looking at that Avengers.
Yeah.
And fuck that.
I bet you were looking at that Avengers.
That's
gonna be a great way to open the episode after.
Yeah.
Oh shit. We might all no show that one. Oh shit. Well, before we go any further towards ending this episode, we shall do our end of the month activities, and I'm gonna be straight up. The poll list is just staying the same this time because we just
Neither of us is changing it based on like one Avengers, one Spider-Man, and one Sergeant Fury.
Yeah. So, best and the worst comics of the month. We'll let Bill run down what the hell we covered this month. We pretty much know, but just a quick little one over. So, I'll let you do that, and we'll talk about our best and then our worst.
Oh, look, I forgot to delete last month's stuff out of this.
Well, I guess we start with our worst and then best now that I think about it. So
yeah, this open, we had Incredible Hulk 60, where Bruce builds the big robot. 61, where he kills it. 62, where he gets locked in jail and freed by the chameleon. 63, where he goes on the train. 64, with the swarm of humanoids. 65, when he goes to gets captured and taken to Russia. 66, when he breaks free. 67, when he goes to Mongolia. 68, where Jack Kirby takes over and they throw all that stuff out the window and go back to the later story. 69, where he gets killed. Nice. A brief break with Avengers 17, where they fight the Minotaur. Like a shitty Theseus. And then back to Tales to Astonish 70 for Bruce getting brought back by Rick. And then 71 is the first one we picked up today, so we run through what we covered today. Yeah, that's so one good thing about it being all Hulk for the month. It's very easy to do the rundown.
Yes. That is lovely.
And we only had 3 weeks this month, so it was slightly easier for that, for length-wise, too. So, we end on the high note, so we'll start with our worst. So, what the hell was your worst of this month?
My worst comic was a little bit up in the air between that Avengers and what I eventually settled on, which is Tales to Astonish 74. Because the Amphibian sucked.
Fair enough. That's fine, because I went with the Avengers. So we covered the bases. I didn't have a Hulk that I gave 1 star. I think they only reached 2 star for the ones I didn't like. So I didn't like that Hulk either, but at least it had the leader death. So I gave it to the Dreadful Avengers. That was also misleading with its fucking Hulk usage.
Yeah, I mean, I can't fault you for hitting that Avengers. I feel like next month Avengers is going to take it from me.
Possibly.
I hate that next Avengers.
Yeah, that next Avengers isn't too good either. Avengers has really hit a rough patch now that it's the Caps Quirky Quartet. Our best, we already know we have the same best of the month, so...
Yes, it's Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos number 19.
Yeah, that...
Even
that
though I didn't like it nearly as much as Ryan, it was still easily the best thing we read this month.
Yeah, I mean, it was better than that Spider-Man, even at Bill's standard, so...
Yeah, I mean, I gave a lot of stuff 3s, but 3 is a wide range for me.
Yeah, I mean, it is the widest range of all the... I would say, of all the ratings.
Yeah, because it covers kind of shitty but not awful up to kind of good but not great, and that's where most comics fall.
Yeah. So that was this week's episode. We should have an interesting episode next week with that lineup we have. Amazing Spider-Man, Daredevil, and Sergeant Fury. Hopefully
we've got some real highs and some real lows next week, and you'll have to tune in to see which are which, because they're all mixed together.
Daredevil. But anyways...
Yeah, Stilt Man is definitely a low.
Anyways, if you're watching us on YouTube, please leave a like, subscribe, comment, and even share if you'd like to. We are also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're on Spotify, click that poll, tell us what your favorite comic was, and let us know why the hell it was the one with Amphibian. Anyways, we will see you on the next episode, and peace out.
Have a good one, everyone.